Good morning, everyone. We're very pleased to have the superintendent of the City School District here with us this morning, Sharon Contreras. Sharon began her career as a high school English teacher in Roxford, Illinois, and went on to serve as principal, area superintendent, and assistant superintendent. She also served as the chief academic officer for the Clayton County Public Schools in Jonesboro, Georgia, and the chief academic officer for Providence Public Schools in Rhode Island. Sharon became the first female superintendent of the Syracuse City School District in 2011 and the first woman of color in the history of New York State to serve as superintendent for one of the Big Five districts. She has spearheaded initiatives to address not only the students' educational needs, but their health and social-emotional needs as well. Sharon implemented breakfast in the classroom and universal free breakfast and lunch programs in all the schools who worked closely with Sayesta Education and Onondaga County to expand the Promise Zone program. She currently serves on numerous boards and councils, including Syracuse 2020, the Syracuse City School District Education Foundation, Near West Side Initiative, and many more. She earned a degree from SUNY Binghamton and the University of Wisconsin, Madison. Please join me in welcoming Sharon Contreras.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure to talk about the great city school districts and the awesome things happening with our gifted and talented students and our very talented and committed staff. So thank you for having me here each year to tell you about the progress we are making for the 21,000 students that we serve and for the families that we are serving, making Syracuse a better place to live. My topic today is education as the best anti-poverty initiative. And there's been a lot of talk about how do we solve this very widespread and deepening problem of poverty in the city, in the state. And I am here to argue that it is through education that we do that, and to talk a little bit about the progress that we've made. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So I'm going to need some help for a moment. Is there someone who can get that back up for me? I'll tell you a little bit about the demographics in Syracuse right now as they pull this back up for me. Currently, 50% of the district population is African American. About 77% of the population is of color. About 23% of the district is white. This is a pretty dramatic change from 15 years ago or even 10 years ago that we've experienced in the district. The vast majority of the students live in poverty in the city and qualify for free and reduced lunch. So they're having some trouble with my PowerPoint here, and are on free and reduced lunch. Many of them are not just immigrant students, but refugee students, which poses its own sort of challenges for the district. While we welcome these students and we embrace the diversity, it adds challenges for teachers who are teaching students who may have never, ever been in school. Many of them are from refugee camps, have been there from the time they were born up until 14 or 15 years old. And as a resettlement location here in Syracuse, they come to the city and we have to not only educate them, but many of them have very deep social emotional needs that have to be met. And I was sharing yesterday while we were advocating in Albany for funding that some of these students have literally seen their parents killed, their mothers raped, their sisters raped, and we have to provide additional services for those students. We also have to engage in lots of legal kinds of issues surrounding students not from this this country with different religious practices. So it's been a challenge for the teachers to meet all of their needs with very limited funding from the state. Okay, let me make sure I got it. Thank you. And you can see that 22% of all refugees coming into New York State are in the city of Syracuse. And those that are children enter into the Syracuse City School District. As you know now, Syracuse has the highest level of poverty concentration among blacks and Hispanics. You see the darkest colors on the south sides and west side of the city. You also see for blacks and Hispanics, we have the highest concentration of those populations living in poverty, ranking number one. And even for whites, we rank number five. What's interesting is you see in that top 10 list, Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse. But for white students, you do not see Buffalo and Rochester. You only see Syracuse on that list. And Syracuse families living in poverty, about 50% of the families with children in Syracuse live in poverty now. I'd like to share a little bit about the Syracuse educational attainment. For college graduates and even high school graduates, it is below the national average. And when you have that many students or individuals living in a city that are undereducated, it will certainly impact the economic development of the city and the region. So let's talk about educational attainment and poverty and the impact of that in the city and nationally. Some 1.1 million American high school students drop out every year. The poverty rate for families headed by dropouts is more than twice that of families headed by high school graduates. Nearly 44% of dropouts under age 24 are jobless. And the unemployment rate of high school dropouts older than 25 is more than three times that of college graduates. The lack of education is one of the strongest predictors of criminal activity in this country. 65% of U.S. convicts are high school dropouts. But for each additional year of schooling, the odds that a student will someday commit a crime like murder or assault are reduced by almost one-third. And increasing graduation rates by 10 percentage points would prevent more than 3,000 murders and nearly 175,000 aggravated assaults in our country every single year. And it's just 5% more young men in high school graduated. America would see an annual savings of $4.9 billion in crime-related costs. It is important that we see education as the best way out of poverty. So what are we doing about it in Syracuse? How are we working to improve the schools, to decrease segregation of our schools, and to turn around underperforming schools? So a key strategy is a portfolio strategy to offer more choice to parents at all levels and to try to encourage individuals who are in the city but sending their children to private schools or living outside of the city to come back in, middle-class parents. So right now, we have several choice programs for pre-K and elementary. We have our first pre-K choice program at Montessori School at Lemoyne, which is opening in the next September, 16-17 school year. And we are so proud of the gains we've been making to expand pre-K in the city, But just that school alone, more than 10% of all parents or pre-K seats parents have applied for Lemoyne, the Montessori school at Lemoyne. So we know that choice does work. We have two dual language programs at Delaware Primary and one at Seymour, and we now have a school for gifted students at the Syracuse Latin School. And more than 5% of all parents who've applied for kindergarten have applied to attend Syracuse Latin. At the middle school level, we have Expeditionary Learning Middle School as a choice school that focuses on active pedagogy and learning expeditions and really focuses on improving culture and having a really great school culture for students to learn in. It is our most overchosen school, middle school, and we plan to expand and open a new Expeditionary Learning School. Right now, the current Elm School can only take in about 120 students, but we expect to open in another 2 years a full Elms program for our middle school students. And for high school choice, we currently offer career technical pathways in every high school, so a student can choose to attend their neighborhood school, or they can choose to go to a different high school based on the career pathway of their choice. While offering health careers at Henninger, we offer Institute of Technology at Syracuse Central with 5 CTE pathways, an IB program at Corcoran High School, Nottingham Natural Resources, STEM, and we are opening a construction technology program at Nottingham. We have the Public Service Leadership Academy at Fowler, which has 11 career pathways, and 2 PTEC early college high school programs at ITC and at Henninger. And we're thinking big about school choice expansion. It saddens me that nearly 60 years after Brown versus Board of Education, that we have some of the most segregated schools in this country. So we've been thinking deeply about how do we change that by allowing parents to choose their neighborhood school or choosing a school of choice somewhere else in the city, but retaining that neighborhood preference as a criteria for admittance into the school. So one of the schools we are really looking deeply into, or two of the schools we're looking deeply into opening for 17-18 school year, is a boys' school for coding, 6th through 12th grade at Danforth Middle School, and a girls' school for coding. Another area that we have to work on in this community and in this country is that less than 2% of those in STEM jobs, or in coding specifically, are Black or Hispanic. And most of the jobs of the future will be in the STEM fields. So we have to think about how do we help students get involved. I read an article in the Bloomberg magazine about Howard University, one of the premier historically Black colleges and universities in this country. The article was so interesting because it talked about their master's program in computer science, but that most of the students could not get a job in Silicon Valley. So the article goes on to talk about the reason they can't is because most of the coders and those who have jobs in Silicon Valley began coding at age of 7. So we are starting to think about how do we offer coding K-12, and we have asked for money in the budget from our delegation and from our legislators to please allow us to start working on K-12 coding. Only 2 districts in the nation right now, urban districts, Chicago and New York City, actually have full plans and curriculum to expand coding to all students K-12, even though the new federal ESSA law has computer science as one of the core subject areas now. So we're looking to have an academy for young men, grades 6 through 12, and also an academy for young women, grades 6 through 12. We're also looking at our first year-round school. And year-round school can be done with or without expanded learning time. but it allows us to reduce some learning loss and to keep school-based services available to students and families throughout the entire year. There are many models for this, three that you see there. One is to have four sessions at 45 days on, 15 days off. In some school districts, like the District of Columbia, that is rolling this out in an entire area of the city in some of the poorest schools, the students will be in session during those 15 days as well for enrichment, except for actual holidays. And they have planned this K-12 so as a continuum of services so that by the time a student graduates, they will actually have more than a year additional schooling. You can use a 3x60 model or a 2x90 model. And we are going to allow those schools that are interested to come up with a schedule that best serves that their needs, but that keeps our students in school across the year. We're also thinking about blended learning at a middle school that focuses on personalized learning, much like the School of One in New York City. And currently, Grant Middle School is going to be our personalized learning middle school in the district. In personalized learning, you use online resources and digital tools to complement the teacher's instruction. It's very powerful in that students learn at their own pace, and you have multiple teachers in larger spaces. We are actually looking at our school renovation so that we have more flexible spaces where you can bring 2 to 3 classrooms down, all of the teachers down, and it looks like something like this. So some students are working on personalized learning with a teacher. Others are getting group tutoring with a teacher. You have some that on the right side that are working on their daily assessments. And every day there's an algorithm that is designed, and it shoots out at the end of the day what the students should be working on the next day. So the teacher isn't trying to figure out what do these three students need and how do I serve that student. They actually use technology to assist them. You also have students working on very intense advanced projects for students in your classroom who don't need remediation but need acceleration. So we look forward to working with the architect firms to design schools of the future. And we are going to open a performing arts academy. Performing arts schools are the most successful schools across the nation in urban school districts. They are the most overchosen schools in the nation in urban school districts. And I believe it is time that we really focus on the arts in this community, and certainly in all of our schools. One of our asks in the budget is to add 25 additional elementary arts teachers, specifically music teachers, to grow programming at the high school level. But we would like to also have a performing arts school for those students who are most gifted and interested and talented in the performing arts. And it will be a wonderful school to design and to think about. And all of these new schools require community support and community input because you each have expertise in the different areas that I've been discussing. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about the design and programming as we move forward with the schools. And certainly, we have expanded our career technical education pathways. It is the one area, and those of you who've heard me speak, you've probably heard me say this before, it's the one area that very few people disagree about. Everywhere I go, people feel like we need more, some call it vocational education, but we need more career education for our students. 4 years ago, we only had five CTE programs in the district. We now have 20, and we are expanding, as I said, construction technology at Nottingham High School and drone technology to align with the urban revitalization initiative that we have planned here. That will be rolled out at PSLA. More than 100,000 jobs in the government and commercial sectors will focus on unmanned aerial vehicles. We want our students to be prepared, and in alignment with URI, we are one of the 6 sites in the nation testing for UA systems, and we want to make sure our students qualify for jobs and are prepared to fill those jobs. So we are rolling out drone technology curriculum and programming at PSLA in September. I mentioned the PTEC early college high schools. I don't know any other district that has 2 PTEC high schools, certainly not in the state. I don't know of any in the nation. We have 1 at ITC, 1 at Henninger High School, where the students earn a high school diploma, an associate degree, and will be first in line for a job with one of the McNee corporations. And we certainly are very grateful for the partnership with McNee that has planned curriculum with us, that goes in and mentors the students in those programs, and we expect great things. And this is a model for many other career programs, pathways at our high schools. And we have extended learning time in our school. More than 12 of our schools have anywhere from 270 additional hours to 300 additional hours. 7,400 students are impacted, approximately 650 teachers. And we have been able to help grow the economy in the region by hiring 128 partners, partner staff through the community-based organizations who make this extended learning time happen. While teachers are in small groups working together, common planning time, the students are engaged in enrichment with Red House, with Syracuse Stage, Baltimore Woods. We've had various partners come in to support us the most, and the students are deeply, deeply engaged in the enrichment that they are receiving, and it's enrichment that they otherwise would not receive and aligns to programming that their middle-class peers have in the suburbs. We continue to work on great facilities through facility repairs, new playgrounds. We now have 4 LEED Silver certified schools. All of the new schools are LEED Silver certified. We have renovated and added instructional space at ITC, Dr. Weeks, Fowler, and H.W. Smith. And coming soon, we will be going forward with the athletic fields at Fowler and 14 school renovations. But none of this really matters without great teachers and great leaders. And we've done much work to develop our teachers and leaders over time. So you probably have seen this slide over time that when students start at the same level and they have one group has 3 great teachers in a row, they grow, they increase by about to about the 76th percentile. However, if they have 3 ineffective teachers, they drop to about the 27th percentile. So we have to constantly focus on teacher quality and supporting teachers so that they can help our students learn and grow. Leadership impact is similar. Along with teachers, principals also have a major impact on student achievement. Now, of the school-based factors, those are all school-based factors, impacting student achievement, teachers impact student achievement at about 33%, and principals are second at about 25%. So leadership matters. All other factors are about 42%, which is a large percentage there. And it's things like how you structure time, how you use volunteers, all of those sorts of things matter in increasing student achievement in your school. And there is a high cost of principal turnover. It is a crisis. I often hear, why are our principals leaving in Syracuse? It is a national phenomenon. 50% of new principals do not return after the 3rd year. That is a fact nationally. The job has become so complex with increasing accountability and making sure there's a focus on learning, that it's very difficult for individuals to manage all of the pieces. At one point, you could be a principal and kind of keep the lights on, make sure there was paper, make sure the copier was working, but that's not the case anymore. And you are held accountable for results. So we see that there's a high cost of principal turnover. And the cost of that, of good preparation, is anywhere from $37,000 to $303,000 to develop principals. That includes the preparation, the hiring, the signing, the internships, the mentoring. So we have put into place programs to support administrators and aspiring administrators. We now have a leadership academy for principals that helps them with how do I have conversations with teachers about instruction? How do I become a data-driven leader and use data to support teachers? How do I improve school culture and climate? We have a vice principal academy. Oftentimes what we've done in school districts, and I think back to being a principal in the late 1990s, there was training for you, or a monthly meeting, and you would have to go back and talk to your assistant on vice principals, and the vice principals never had the opportunity to engage or to learn or to grow professionally, and sometimes it caused a crisis where there was no one on the bench because there was constant development of the principals but not the vice principals. We have new Principals Institute now, and we also have the Syracuse Aspiring Leadership Academy for those who are aspiring to become leaders in the district. Some of those are vice principals or new vice principals. Many of them are teachers, teacher leaders who are aspiring to take over positions. Most of our administrators in the district for the last 3 years have come out of the Syracuse Aspiring Leadership Academy. We have hired large numbers of teachers in the last few years as well. In fact, since I've been here, I've had the pleasure of working with the team to hire 750 teachers in 5 years. But when you recruit those teachers, you have to make sure you're hiring those who have the disposition to want to work in an urban school district, as well as high skill level for pedagogy and for making sure that students are mastering content. So we have three goals: to find and attract diverse, talented candidates through creative means. Right now, we're working with the School of Education at Syracuse University on a partnership with historically black colleges and universities to pay their master's degree in education if they will come after they graduate from their education program with a bachelor's degree, if they will come and work in Syracuse 5 years to make sure we diversify the teacher pool. We also have been working to fully execute an applicant-friendly, efficient, and rigorous selection process, which includes a screening tool that measures one's disposition to work in an urban school district. And we're making sure that we have timely and early hiring of candidates. We have been hiring teachers for the following school year in February and March and April. When I first got here, we were still hiring a great deal of the teachers after school began, after Labor Day. So we now recruit much earlier. We track the hiring sources and use evaluation data to assess the quality of the sources. So we look at the teachers that come from specific universities or those that we went out through a specific job fair. We track that to see, are those teachers performing in school and should we continue recruiting from that particular college, university, or other source? We also increase the number of touch points in the interview process, making it highly personal to really encourage folks to come work in the Syracuse City School District. And we rank all of the applicants and over time see how many of the top applicants get hired. So we, although the board actually hires, we are the first district in the state to negotiate mutual consent where our principals get to select their teachers, and the teachers have to agree. So both parties, the principal and teacher, have to agree that they want to work in the school. It's not just based on seniority, as you see in many districts, and people move and bounce just based on how many years they have in the district. The principal and the teacher must agree to be at the school. And we have a new contract with competitive wages. The average teacher salary will increase by more than $12,500. The starting teacher salary is increasing by 13% to $47,500. For those teaching in extended learning schools, first-year teachers make $53,300 or $54,300. Anybody here a retired teacher? Do you remember what you started with? So look at these salaries today. I looked up a starting engineering salary. It's at $62,000. So we are closing the gap to make sure that teaching is seen as competitive and that you can make a living. The base salary by 2019 will increase to about $75,000 for 800 teachers, more than 800 teachers in the district. And by that school year, the 2018-19 school year, the salaries will be among the highest in Onondaga County. We also maintain our top-tier benefits, but are realizing cost savings by going to a high-deductible plan and by including effective wellness initiatives. So yes, we have increased the salaries up substantially, but we are making sure that there is cost savings through an affordable health care plan. We offer teachers professional development. We have expanded that greatly. We refine offerings every quarter and offer Saturday institutes, summer institutes. We have new teacher pre-service training that increased from 30 hours to 60 hours before they walk into the classroom, and all new teachers receive an additional 160 hours of professional development during their first year. And we maintain and have expanded the peer assistance and review program with the Syracuse Teachers Association, where new classroom teachers receive support during their first year. The turnover rate for principals is very high. It's also extraordinarily high across the country and in urban school districts for classroom teachers. And we have expanded what is known as opportunity culture or career ladders. So the only way in the past a teacher could grow or become a leader was to go into administration. But now we have what is called a career ladder program or teacher leader program that has two goals: to give more students access to excellent teaching and to transform teaching into a highly paid profession. So those who participate in these programs, for part of the day, you are teaching your own students. For the other part of the day, you are working with your grade level peers and co-teaching with another teacher to provide support in that classroom. And for doing that, you are paid additional, how much is it a year? $5,000 a year on top of your salary to participate as a master teacher. So you've all heard much about the national dilemma of the school-to-prison pipeline. So while we are doing all this work to turn around schools, to offer school choice, to grow teachers, we are still dealing with the very serious situation of suspensions and disproportionate suspensions in the Syracuse City School District. I want to remind us, this is school year 2010, of what the suspensions looked like in Syracuse City School District. So the national average, suspension average, was at 11%. Syracuse was at 31%. For students with disabilities, the national average was at 19%. But despite all of the federal and state protections those students have in Syracuse, it was at 44%. And you see all of the differences between the national average and Syracuse for white students, black students, Hispanic students, and English language learners. For every single group, Syracuse suspended many, many more students. And here's the correlation between ninth grade suspensions and graduation rates for three cohorts of students who graduated in 2011, 2012, and 2013. So there's much research about being suspended at ninth grade and ending up a dropout or not graduating on time. You can see for the 2011 school year, if a student was never suspended in the Syracuse City School District, they had about a 58% chance of, or 58% of those students graduated. It dropped to 38% if you had just one suspension at ninth grade. If you were suspended four times, only 14% of those students graduated. You see similar data the next school year. 57% of the students who had zero suspensions graduated. When you get to four suspensions in ninth grade, it drops down to 6%. And for 2013, 58% of the students with zero suspensions graduated. By the time you got to four suspensions, it was down to 12%. We know the research says that suspensions for minor infractions are very dangerous, have a negative impact on the students, and as a result, many, many districts across the nation, without being pressed by an attorney general, have made changes. The state of Maryland banned zero tolerance discipline policies. The youth leaders in Philadelphia scored a victory and got the Philadelphia School District to change their discipline policies. In Los Angeles Unified School District, they passed a groundbreaking student bill of rights to reduce suspensions. And the fourth largest school district in America this school year eliminated all out-of-school suspensions in Miami-Dade County. We have seen much progress as a result of working to implement a code of conduct that focuses on restorative practices. We still, irrespective of the fact that you may hear or that no one's being suspended, we lost more than 11,000 days to out-of-school suspension last year alone. So students are suspended, but they are suspended for criminal activity and for violence or for sexual assault, sexual harassment, for things like disobedience or other kinds of matters, cursing. They either go to in-school suspension, we have mediation, we restore them back to the classroom to make certain that we are not losing students and increasing the chances that they will drop out of school. And we have many supports in place as well. All of our schools have anywhere from 7 to 21 additional staff. Some of those are community partners, some of those are staff members in the district to work with teachers and work with staff and to work with our families to provide them support. So we have family support specialists in 31 schools. Peaceful Schools provides five coaches for our schools. The Center for Community Alternatives helps us transition students back into school who have been suspended long-term or who have been incarcerated. We work with Peace, Inc., with foster grandparents who are working in our first and second grade classrooms. We work with mental health clinicians and provide mental health clinicians in 29 of our 34 sites. Contact Community Services through Primary Project provide support in 19 schools. We have Promise Zone in 33 schools, the Hillside Work Scholarship Connection in 11 schools, and again, student assistance counselors through Contact Community Services in 15 schools. So we're not just moving and saying we don't want students suspended. We are trying to provide support so that if a student is suspended, they can return to school quickly and not commit the action infraction again, and we're also trying to be proactive to help students change their behavior and to change the school cultures. We are so grateful for the many partnerships that we have in the district. One that you all know so well, Say Yes to Education, Free Tuition Guarantee, which has now been preserved, allowing us to permanently endow our scholarships. Mayor Minor announced $400,000 will be donated to Say Yes as a result of proceeds from bonds, and County Executive Mahoney announced $20 million toward the Syracuse College Promise. So none of our students have to worry about being able to afford college, being able to go to college, and I am incredibly grateful to both the mayor and to the county executive and all of those who helped us to realize the goal of $30 million and college for all. I'd also like to thank all of our community-based partners who provide field trips for us, experiential learning, who work with us on social-emotional learning, on all sorts of different areas in a student's life. They support our teachers. They provide training. They offer parent university classes. We have so many partners in the district, and I can assure you we could not do what we do without our partners coming into the buildings or allowing us into your spaces every single day to support children and teachers. We continue to partner with Syracuse University, Lemoyne. The president of Lemoyne just spoke with me about expanding math professional development for our classroom teachers through a summer intensive professional development program. We work with Oswego to train teachers of English language learners, and we continue to partner with OCC on many of our career pathways programs, making sure that our students have a smooth transition into college. And as I just mentioned, we work with both the city, the county, the police department, and the state of New York to support students. So the question is it working? Are we making improvements that just not only entail improving test scores, but entail improving the quality of life for our students? So here's the progress. We've increased graduation rates for the four-year graduation rate, the five-year graduation rate, and the four-year August rate. You can see over time we've gone from 45% to 55% in June, and the five-year graduation rate for the first time in a decade hit 60% with every single high school improving. The dropout rates are decreasing, they have decreased from 26% to 16%. That means fewer students on the street. You can see the changes over 5 years. That means those students are in school, in our programs, and not looking for jobs or looking for trouble on the streets. And finally, we have dramatically improved our state education accountability status. We just heard last week that we tripled the number of schools in good standing to 9 for the first time since No Child Left Behind was enacted. 13 schools improved their overall academic standing, and another 9 schools, 50% of them, were removed out of receivership status in 1 year. So I want to leave you with this quote. It's not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change. It is important as we think about our public schools and anti-poverty that we think about how do we offer programming that is meaningful to our students, how do we help our teachers and leaders grow, and how do we become the most improved urban school district in the nation. We do that by making sure that we are innovative and that we adapt to change. And I am so grateful, thankful to all of you who have helped us implement all of these programs and initiatives in the district. And I am so pleased to let you know that the district is moving forward, is making progress, and we will be a major contributor to the anti-poverty initiatives in the city of Syracuse. Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll take some questions if anyone wants to ask the superintendent anything. Okay.
I really appreciate your presentation. I think it was very substantial and encouraging. and very detailed. I noticed there was a little applause when you mentioned adding arts teachers, and I don't know whether that was because of arts or because of teachers. But I wanted to ask about increasing the number of adults in the schools, particularly teacher assistants, if you could talk about their role and whether there's a plan to increase them, and is that a way not only to, you know, increase the supervision of students, but also is it a pipeline for future diverse and inclusion in the teaching staff?
So we have increased the number of staff in the building by 227 in 2 years. So we've been increasing the staff. There's no plan to really cut or eliminate teaching assistants. However, we did have a problem where in some schools, more than 50% of the staff were non-teachers of the adults. So the research tells us you need in between 70 and 80% of your staff to be actual certified teachers to show gains. So we have been transitioning some of the TA positions to teacher positions, and we are planning to add more teachers. We're not expanding TAs this year, but we have made a budget request to expand the teaching force by about 100 teachers. How many teachers are in the district? Is that what someone asked? 1,900.
Hi, thank you so much for presenting this. It is very encouraging. Since poverty is a big issue as far as educating the children, has there been much discussion with things like a human bus to school so the kids aren't afraid to walk to school? Is there a lot of absenteeism? Is that being addressed? An ophthalmologist in school so kids with bad eyes can get services. Has there these type of things been addressed at all?
Yes. So we haven't discussed the human bus, but we did submit legislation yesterday to decrease the walk zone from 1.5 miles to 0.5 miles. So I encourage all of you to reach out to our delegation to pass that, see that that legislation is included in the budget, the legislative budget, and that it passes. But we do have clinics in our schools, in 8 of the schools, and we do work very closely with the county to make sure that students are receiving health services. Certainly, there is much more that we can do. I was sharing with one of the board members yesterday that at one of our schools, I constantly see calls for paramedics for asthma. We have to do more to look into how many of our students have uncontrolled asthma and are suffering. But we do have clinics. Every school has a nurse. We're asking the state to continue to fund the nurses. Right now, the state funds 14, but we have 41 full-time nurses. And I can tell you, I've worked in 4 districts. Most districts do not have RNs in their schools. So we're really pleased that we have the RNs. But there is certainly more we can do in terms of anti-poverty initiatives. But our partners have been working closely with us, and the agencies that work in the district no longer just work with the students. They now work with the families, which is the key, because sometimes they're working with the students, and then the students go home and there's no follow-through. But all of the agencies you saw there now receive a consent form to go into the homes and work with the families as well. So there are many positive steps forward in that area.
Sharon, thank you for the presentation. Having tried a couple of presidencies, I'm aware that what you've described spills over into higher education. Charlie Reed, who headed the California system, believed that in order to enhance student achievement in colleges and universities, that it was important to invite in parents to aid student success. And I'm wondering whether or not there is any data, or have you given any thoughts to how we might engage parents of our children in the educational effort in order to get more cooperation there?
Thank you. You know, we obviously struggle in this area, but we have engaged several thousand parents a year through Parent University. As I said, we have a Parent University, but it's all of you who teach those classes. It's the agencies that teach the classes, and they are classes on how to control diabetes, how to shop with $100 a week for a family, go grocery shopping for $100 a week. There are courses on. Your child can go to college. It's amazing how many parents say to me, well, I wasn't good in math, he's not good in math, and college isn't for him. And I have to explain, there's no math gene, so your child can, you know, achieve at math and go on to college. So the universities partner with us. The agencies, as I said, are working with parents, but it is an area that we still need innovative ideas about, because the neediest parents do not come to Parent University, do not come into the school. So we have to think about programming that will make parents, the most vulnerable parents, feel like they can come into school. And sometimes when they come in, they're so angry, they don't necessarily handle the situation appropriately, but they're trying to advocate. And I often say, particularly to the faith-based community, it would be helpful if we had not only student mentors, but parent mentors. Like, I know you're upset, let me go to the school with you. The way to handle this is not necessarily to threaten the principal or the teacher. They're reasonable people, let's sit down with them. But many parents don't know how to handle that. So I appreciate the question, and I am always willing to listen to all of you to figure out how do we engage even more parents.
If a student comes from a dysfunctional family, it's understandable that they may not do well in school. How does a school district deal with that source of poor scholarship?
That, how do we deal with that through what? I didn't get that.
If a student comes from a dysfunctional family, that obviously is a big handicap when they go to public school. And my question is, do you have any kind of follow-through to deal with a kid who's got a no father or a dysfunctional father or mother, and how that impacts his education? In other words, is there any interaction between social services in the city and the school district?
Absolutely. We have a very strong partnership with the county. But as I mentioned, these agencies now go into the homes. So they work with the student during the day, and then they go into the home, sometimes during the day, sometimes during the evenings. The other thing we're doing is expanding pre-K, and we're trying to expand it down, pre-kindergarten, down to even three-year-olds, to get schools into high-quality classrooms earlier to try to mitigate for some of the impact of poverty and some of the struggling families. So if we can get every single child, three-year-old and four-year-old, into pre-K, I think that would help a great deal. But in the meantime, what we're doing is going into the homes and working with those families. But as you know, it's not easy. You know, some of the dysfunction you see is simply because they don't have jobs. It's the amount of stress, not having grocery stores right there in the community, just eating habits. We're working with the American Heart Association to support the school district. And we have a healthy eating program in the district, universal breakfast and lunch that started 2 years ago. 100% of our students are fed. We're now looking at universal dinner. So students will take home food with them, healthy food, so that they're not stopping at these corner stores and eating candy and juice all day. And many of our students line up early outside of our school doors just because they don't eat. The only two meals they get all day are at the school district. So many of the things I spoke about in the agencies that we partner with are trying to address the issue you've raised.
Who is currently providing the professional development for teachers and the leadership institutes for the administration?
So the training is provided through teacher leaders. Most of the training, we do have some technical assistance partners that come in, but most of the training is done by other teachers in the district through our career ladder program. And we also have master principals, mentor principals in the district who are working with other principals, new principals, those who are struggling in the district.
Thank you. I'm really interested in what the school system is doing for the pre-K, for the three-year-olds, the four-year-olds, the five-year-olds, because they seem to be the population that most benefit from what the school district can give them, both them and their parents. That being said, as you go forward in this, are in expanding those programs, because I know they are expanding, what are you doing in sort of an extra effort to reach those parents who are having first-time exposure to the Syracuse City school systems and some of the expectations. And I know that one of the things that was recently implemented for the younger students was 2 snacks a day instead of the usual one. Well, when I asked, where do the snacks come from? Because I'm one of those people who are very suspect of parents being able to provide the children with everything they need when they go to school, there was no definitive answer. The answer was, well, the parents. But it seems to me you have a vulnerable population there that may not be able or even realize the needs of the children in school. So what extra efforts are you giving to those teachers and to the children and to those parents in trying to reach them in a positive way, include them? Because that's probably going to be, as I said, the most vulnerable, the most diverse, and the hardest population to draw in. Yet it is a wonderful opportunity to begin the process to draw them into the active academic life of their kids.
Thank you. So the pre-K program, we've received several million dollars to expand pre-K classrooms in the district and through our community-based organizations. Those grants also include supports for families, making sure that we're recruiting pre-K parents. And we send notices home to every address in the city now, not just to our current families, but to every address in the city. We have radio ads, TV spots asking folks to come in. One of the challenges we have is that you can only enroll your legal guardian can enroll a student. And this is one thing that Peter has been trying to help us with. So they are grandparents who have taken on their 3-4-year-olds, but they're not allowed to register them in school because they're not the legal guardian. And that is New York State law, and it's to protect children from being taken. And they won't get the county involved because their child may be on drugs or doing something wrong, and they don't want the county to come in and harm their child in any way, or that's the perception they have. So we do need help with the basic education law so that we can enroll these families and that these families are not fearful to tell the county, I'm the grandparent and I'm helping this student right now, my grandchild right now. The thing you mentioned about snacks, we actually have fresh fruit programs in the district and snack programs that are provided by the district. So I'd love to talk to you a little more about why students would need to bring their own snacks into the classroom, because our elementary schools provide fresh fruits daily for the children. So I'd be glad to talk to you about that.
We have time for one more question.
It seems obvious that there's been an incredible change in the school environment, certainly for those of us who hadn't been there in decades, beyond education. You're into healthcare, you're into social services, you're in the criminal justice system. Are the university programs that are producing teachers and administrators even recognizing this issue, especially for urban school districts?
So I think the vast majority of superintendents in urban school districts would say no, that teachers come out of the program shell-shocked. One thing I am really hopeful about is our residency programs. We have one with Oswego, one with Syracuse University, where individuals are in a school a year before their license. For those of us who went into education years ago, you know, you student taught for 6 to 8 weeks and then you got a job. We're now moving toward residency programs, and we feel the individuals who are teaching for us now that went through those programs are far more effective because the university professor came in and coached them. They had a mentor teacher, and they did this for an entire year. So I think there is hope for partnerships with universities and school districts. The district actually pays for that program now. The university once had a grant, but now we fund that to make sure we have more teachers that are actually prepared to go into a classroom. But I would still say many of our teachers, only 23% of the teachers actually live in Syracuse. So many of them have not worked with urban youth before, and it is difficult initially, and that's one of the reasons we engage in so much professional development for our teachers. But we do have strong partnerships with the universities, and I think the residency is the way to go to make sure teachers are prepared for urban classrooms.
Thank you so much, Superintendent Contreras, for joining us this morning.